This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Thursday, Friday, Wednesday morning. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Fiona Deering from Melbourne, Australia, where it is Thursday morning now while we're recording. And you are listening to the Australian edition of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for March 3, episode 1373, brought to you by Remote Coach and Chamberlain's Lawyers. Good morning, Horse World.
So this is Anything Can Happen Thursday.
Everyone has a place. They're not just horses, they're part of my family.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us on this Thursday morning, although it always confuses the heck out of me when I record with you because it's one day for me and another day for you. And
we're in the future.
Yeah, it's always just so confusing, but I'm so glad you're here. I love doing the Australian episode. And of course, Fiona joins us the first Thursday of every month with the Australian episode, where it is the best day of the month on Horses in the Morning for accents.
It is. It is. I could even practice my New Zealand accent if you liked.
And we are so glad that you all have joined us. I know we have a lot of new listeners here, and I think you're going to enjoy the Australian episode. Just to remind everybody, Australia New Zealand has now, on most of our shows, moved into second place.
We beaten out Canada?
Yes, you're even beating out Canada now.
Go us.
And, you know, that's considering, when you take a look at Australia and take a look at Canada, they're probably about the same size, and they probably both have about the same amount of empty space, except Canada's is filled with snow, and yours is filled with desert.
Sure are.
So, theirs is just colder than yours, but there's still no people there.
Snow. Yeah, less snow, particularly at the moment. It's been, we're in autumn now, and it's meant to be over 30 degrees in Melbourne for the next week or 10 days.
And that's about 1,000 degrees here, right?
Yeah. About 1,050, I think. Yeah.
So,
and I'm actually having to rearrange some teaching for the end of next week up near the border of New South Wales because it's meant to be 39, 40 degrees there. So no one wants to stand out in that for 8 hours.
It must be interesting for you to watch all the posts from the United States of people posting their 2 feet of snow.
I can't get my head around it. I look at it and I go, I know that's happening, but I just can't fathom it. I've been to the snow, but I've never seen snow like that. That's just crazy. And it dumps like overnight, like there's no snow and then you're up to your butt in snow.
You don't get snow where you are in Australia, right?
No. I'm in Melbourne in Victoria. Sometimes we have a range of, mountains, big hills really, called Mount Dandenong, just out of probably an hour's drive out of the city, and that will get a dusting of snow now and then. But certainly you've got to drive sort of probably 3 hours or so up into the high country. To get proper snow where you can go skiing.
Interesting.
So it's quite a novelty if it snows that close to Melbourne.
In the meantime,
people lose their minds.
In the meantime, you're sweating your butts off down there. So.
Pretty much, yeah. It's really, really hot. And just, autumn. Stop with the heat. I don't do heat.
Well, coming up on today's show, we have a bunch of stuff planned for you. We're going to have a horse tip for you that Fiona will do. And I know you're going to talk about straightness today.
Sure are.
Linda Walker is going to be on talking about the Royal Sydney Easter Show. And it's so funny because I'll tell you a story over the weekend I heard about that. And now I've heard about it twice in 1 week, which is amazing. Russell Kilby is going to be on. He's the producer of The Man from Cox River. And we're going to talk about a little bit of this, a similar situation that we have here with the Mustangs in some areas of the United States. What's going on with your version of wild horses down there in Australia? So that's going to be very interesting. And he produced a film about that. So we're going to talk to talk to him about that, all coming up on today's show. But first, our Daily Whinnies. Well, my Daily Whinny goes out to a girl I met over the weekend at a podcasting conference here in Tampa, Florida. Her name, she was a really sweet girl, and her name is Kelly Glover. She works for a company called Interview Connections, and what they do is they actually book people to be guests on podcasts. That's what they do for a living. They're actually professional guest bookers. Super, super nice people, super nice company. I've gotten to know Jessica Rhodes, who is the one who founded that company really well. She'd become a good friend, and Kelly works for her, and she's originally from Sydney.
Ah, and we're everywhere.
And she's as bubbly as they get. I mean, to the point where, you know, if it was a bubble bath, it'd fill the entire bedroom, or the entire bathroom, I mean. It would just be that, it'd be that bubbly. And so I wanted to give her my shout-out. Now, she does a show, and it is called BigCurvyLove.com. So I have no idea what this show is about, but I'm guessing that it's about Big Curvy Love. So I can see her doing a show about Big Curvy Love. So I don't know if this has an explicit rating on it or not.
I went to say it and then I stopped, but I have no idea. Should you listen after dark?
I don't know. But if you want to give it a try and give us a report on BigCurvyLove.com, let me know and we'll do a report on it. We're going to have to get Kelly on the next Australian episode just to talk about what her show's about.
Yeah.
That'd be fun. But she mentioned to me about the Sydney Royal Easter Show. She said, you have to go see that. You have to go to Australia and you have to go see it. And then when you said it was on today, it was like, wow, that's deja vu.
Yeah, spooky. Isn't it funny how those sorts of things, you know, you hear it mentioned once and then you hear it mentioned three or four times again in the next few days.
Exactly.
Crazy.
So I'm excited to hear about the Royal Sydney Easter Show, which I assume has nothing to do with bunnies and more to do with horses.
Lots to do with horses. Okay. It's a little bit like, well, Linda will be able to tell us, but it's our agricultural show. It's the country comes to the city. So I guess like your state fairs.
Oh, yeah. Very good.
So there are sideshow rides and
horses
and cows.
Oh, do you have funnel cakes
cows.
Too?
Do we have, sorry?
Funnel cakes?
What are funnel cakes?
No, you obviously don't.
Linda could almost give you the whole story of cheese on a stick, though.
Okay. See, I got to ask what your fair food is, and we'll compare fair foods when Linda comes on.
Oh, she is like the gourmet fair food girl.
Okay, good. Well, we'll have that conversation when she comes on, because I want to see what Australian fair food is.
Yeah.
I got to find out. By the way, a funnel cake is fried dough with powdered sugar on top.
Oh, we probably have some version
of that. Yeah. It's probably called something different. Now I got to go to the website and go. I'll be distracted by food the entire time. So. All right, well, we're going to do all of that coming up on today's show. You wanted to chat a little bit about Australian racehorse mares. What was it there?
I had heard Jamie talking about the Zenyatta colt making his debut.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And a good friend of mine has a 2.5% share in one of Mackayby Diva's foals. Now, Mackayby Diva won the Melbourne Cup 3 times in a row. So
that's
fairly
like
serious.
Your superstar.
Yeah, she was a serious superstar. I cried my eyes out.
Your
on the
Zenyatta.
She was pretty amazing. But none of her foals have done a thing.
Really?
So, no. Nah. But it's, and so then
dressage
I.
Dressage horses, eventers.
Geldings. so. Tacneen, this horse that my friend has some 2.5% in, well, my friend's going to still be working because he's won $8,130 prize money. So he's had 15 starts, 1 win, 3 seconds and 1 third. And I know that the win was, well, one step up from
apparently
a
picnic at a claimer
race.
Yeah,
not far from it. but, you know, then I was having a look at Black Caviar's foals, and I think I put up a picture of the new foal in the auditor's book a little while ago, in the auditor's Facebook page a little while ago, and he could probably he's only, what, he was born beginning of September. So, you know, if he's looking for something to do before he starts racing, he could probably just go in some quarter horse yearling classes maybe, because he is a tank. You should see this thing. But, you know, there's been this whole history of these mares either not breeding on well, so missing a lot of breedings, or just producing progeny that don't do much.
You know, if we just took a look at it statistically, if you go back to your statistics class in college or high school, with the, like, zillions of horses bred every year, the chances that you're actually going to get one that's good is slim.
Well, that's right. And see, the mares are producing a tiny amount compared to the stallions. So law of averages says that, you know, a stallion is going to throw a good horse now and then, but the mare only gets one shot at it per year. So I'm, you know, I'm as interested in bloodlines as the next person, but I'm just saying. I'm not sure how excited I'd be about my race-winning mare producing race-winning foals.
You know, you've heard me talk on the show. I, you know how I feel about bloodlines. I think that they, I'm not a total believer. Just because you see so many horses that come out of the blue, and, you know, who aren't from the best of blood, I think it comes down to a lot about will, determination, talent, and heart.
Absolutely. And when you look at these mares that they're talking about, like Maccabi Diva and Black Caviar, you know, they're well bred. They're certainly not badly bred, but there are a lot of other horses bred just as nicely.
And, you know, if that's true of people too, if you look at people, yeah. I mean, you got two geniuses married doesn't mean they're good. You know, a lot of them end up with murderer children. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to end up with another genius, right?
That's the one.
I forgot your daily Winnie. Do you have one?
I do have a daily Winnie.
Sorry, I totally forgot. Oh.
My daily Winnie might be a little bit cheesy, but it goes out to the auditors because I love those guys. They're so much fun.
You know, it's funny because you're the only host from the monthly shows that I think have joined the auditors. And I'm surprised that more of them don't, just to see what's going on in there, because I cannot keep up with the conversations anymore.
I know. I wake up of a morning because they all happen while I'm asleep. And in my news feed,
you must have, you know, a thousand
dozen posts are from the auditors. But I feel like I've got a little family in America now. It's great. And I've, you know, made some friends and, yeah,
and
I love
we're starting
it.
To get auditors from around the world. We have Canada in there, Sweden.
And there's one other girl from Australia. She's from Adelaide.
From Australia, right, exactly. Yeah. I think it's getting more international. And now there's five guys.
Yes.
We could play poker now. We have enough. We're taking over the world, us horse guys. You look out, women. We're.
I'll be very scared if I get up in the morning and there's a poker game going on in there.
All right, let's get to our tip today. Oh, by the way, if you want to see about how to become an auditor, you can just go to horsesinthemorning.com and there's an auditor banner in the middle of the page. It's for as little as $1 a month. You can help support the hosts at the Horse Radio Network and also the network itself. If it's kind of a value for value proposition, if you get some value out of our shows and you want to contribute, now you do get some benefits too, perks. There's some perks along the way, mugs and hats and things. But the most important perk, I think, is getting into that super secret private Facebook page just
and
for
getting
authors.
All the advance information.
Yeah, we might give away a few secrets before they happen in there. So, and yeah. Also you get the blooper reel, which is a new one about to come out too. So The auditors are the only ones that hear the blooper reels. There's been four of those so far and there'll be another one coming out. So all of that is happening if you become an auditor. Well, let's do your tip of the month.
Yes. So I wanted to have a little talk about straightness because it's something you hear a lot about. And so firstly, you know, when we're looking at a horse and rider combination that of finding it a challenge to be straight, we obviously need to ensure that the horse isn't carrying an injury or a saddle fit issue that's making it physically difficult for them to be straight. Two of the most common errors I see with the horse not being is that the horse isn't sufficiently forward. and in a good rhythm, and the rider is actually crooked. If you think about if your horse is wandering along without any real rhythm or being forward and you're working really, really hard to try and get him straight, well, you've actually skipped some fairly important steps. On the training scale, straightness is quite a way along it. So first of all, you've got rhythm, suppleness, connection and impulsion preceding straightness. So if you are struggling, always go back a few steps and check that you've got those elements first. One of my favourite exercises when I have someone in front of me complaining that they're not straight is just to say, you know, drop your rein to the buckle and just ask the horse to walk or trot on and be nice and forward. Don't worry too much about where they're going. Obviously, this is much easier if you're in an enclosed space. And certainly don't worry about where their head is, but do check in with how much straighter he may be travelling, which brings us to you as a rider. You may be crooked in your own body, you may be crooked in your hands, in how you're asking for your horse to come into a connection. And I often like to do a sneaky video when people aren't aware that you're videoing, or you can ask a friend to video you and just have a look at it without going, oh my God, I look terrible on my horse. Look at it analytically and check if your hips a level, if your shoulders are level, if there's an equal length from the top of your breeches through to your armpits on each side. You really can't work on riding your horse straight until you're level yourself. And often if we've been crooked for a long time, and I know most women, you know, just think about the things we do all the time. We might hold a child on one hip permanently. We might carry a handbag on one side all the time. All of those things mean that we may not be as straight as we'd like to be, and you may need to actually have some body work done yourself, because being crooked is going to feel normal to you if you've been like that for a long time, whereas feeling straight will feel a little bit weird. And you may, you know, so have check in with, you know, whether you prefer your chiro or your osteo or any of those sorts of health professionals. And finally, just a really good exercise to practice with is come down your centre line in your arena, find a point at your eye height around 100 metres outside of the arena and ride towards that. So look at it, aim your sternum and belly button on it. Imagine you have a glass of water on each shoulder and make sure that one doesn't spill. I like to talk about, you know, having glasses of champagne in each hand, and if you drop one, well, that's yours, because I really like champagne and I'll be having the one that's not on the ground. Ride your trot rhythm really nice and forward, so where it feels easy to rise or post to the trot, and then make sure that when you're turning left or right at C that you keep that nice rhythm. And if you find that your horse is struggling in that 60 by 20 metre traditional dressage arena, just find a flat space outside the arena, or even you can do this sort of thing out on the trail. So, you know, always make sure your horse is nice and forward and check in with yourself. Those are the two biggest errors I see with people becoming frustrated with riding their horse straight.
Very good. Thank you, Fiona. And of course, if you want more tips like this, you can go to remotecoach.com. Check out the website there.
With us today, we have Linda Walker, who is the Horse Competitions and Events Coordinator for the Royal Sydney Easter Show, which is running from the 17th to 30th of March. Welcome, Linda.
Thank you, Fee. Good to be here.
Absolutely. Now, first things first, how does the show get to be a royal show?
It got to be a royal show. It was back in, I believe, 1891. The Royal Agricultural Society of New South Wales approached Queen Victoria about adding the royal title to it. And the royal title comes about when the society is considered sufficiently preeminent and important enough, I guess, in its social context to represent the Crown of England. And they granted the title, which the Royal Ag Society is very proud of. And, it's continued to this day. And every year we actually have in our official opening ceremony, have a horse-drawn vehicle that the RAS owns, the calèche, which leads our Grand Parade and official opening, enters the ring with a Queen's representative every year. And it's a time-honoured tradition, I guess. And it has the royal logo on its doors, the Royal Coat of Arms.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how it all came about.
I know it is quite the tradition in Australia and you know, quite the honour to be associated with a royal show, but I knew it was something our American listeners may not be entirely familiar with.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so that's how it all came about.
Has any royalty ever been to it? Because I always thought to get the royal designation that the Queen had to actually have shown up once.
I'm not sure if the Queen has, because okay. Well, not in my time in the last few years, but the year before last we had Prince William and Duchess
Close enough.
Kate come along.
That's even better.
Yeah, I was here for it. I was very excited. I got to wave to them.
That's even better. I mean, you get Kate there, you're good.
I know. Kate didn't come and have a cheese stick with me, though, so I was a little bit disappointed.
Speaking of which, before we talk about the horse stuff, I got to know about the food. I want to compare foods, you know, like fair food from United States to Australia. Now, we have these things that everybody knows about. You know, we have a number of things. And Fiona distracted me earlier because she said that you guys are going to have turkey legs wrapped in bacon this year.
We are. I'm so excited.
I can't think
this
of anything
news.
Better, by the way. I can't wait
to try it.
Is it going to be
giant turkey legs at that, Glenn.
Oh,
giant.
I love turkey legs. And I love anything wrapped
stick.
In bacon.
Yeah. I'm excited. I don't care. Now, I need it to get me through the show.
Yes.
We have something called a funnel cake, which is basically like cake batter that's deep fried and covered in powdered sugar.
Oh, we have something similar, and they put it on a stick.
You guys do like your sticks, don't you?
Yeah, if it can go on a stick, it can go at the show.
I'll tell you what.
Food is popular.
I had the other day, and it's really good. And they're having it. They have it at fairs all over the place now. And that's deep fried Oreos, where they batter them and they deep fry them, and boy, are they good because they get all gooey in the middle.
I think we need to bring this to Sydney Royal.
Deep fried Oreos would be great for you guys.
That would be. I think I need to flag this.
What's the biggest like fair food? What do people have to have when they go?
Well, for me, it's cheese on a stick. I don't know if you have it there, but it is like a soft cheese, battered and then deep fried, and it's on a stick, because what is food if it's not presented to you on a stick for you to walk around the show? That for me is pretty good. A lot of food's on a stick. Your corn on a cob on a stick with butter and salt. Pluto pups are very popular.
What are they?
What's a Pluto pup? Is that?
I think they might be. Are they corn dogs in America?
Corn dogs. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the corn dogs are always popular.
Yeah, they're really healthy too. Corn dogs.
Dagwood dogs. They might. They're Pluto pups or Dagwood dogs.
Okay.
I guess they.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can call them either. Same. Potato, potato.
Sausage dipped in fat and put on a stick.
Exactly.
Pretty much, yeah, anything bad for you is popular, because it's the show, and it just becomes fat-free as you walk through the gate, I think.
Now, you guys have, I think, even more than we do, because you're closer, you have more of an Asian influence. So are Asian foods popular at fairs?
Yeah, we have a real range of food that you can also, believe it or not, you can get a lot of healthy food at the show as well.
No.
We have
vegetables?
You can get some, fresh foods and lovely, fresh fruit salads and a lot of things. We have a really big, beautiful fruit and veggie display that we, the district exhibits, that we have set up in beautiful displays, almost like massive posters that are done in fruit and vegetables and grains.
Oh, they take up nearly a whole pavilion and they make
they
a
take
picture.
Up a whole pavilion, yeah, and they look like a massive big poster wall and
Yeah, that and it's all like made
as design. Yeah.
It's like painting with fruit and vegetables.
Yeah, like paintings with fruit and vegetables, and you can actually buy the produce from that as well.
Now, I know that it's an Australian agricultural fair when you have a wine show also. So, you know, and also a royal beer and cider show, because the Australians cannot do a fair without alcohol. So, it's perfect.
Right. It would be on Australian.
It would be.
Just excuse me for a moment. I'm checking out flights to Sydney. I can bunk down with you, can't I, Linda?
That's right. Yep. Always a bed.
Yep.
So this is truly an agricultural show. Now, do they show anything except horses, like cows and pigs and chickens? And
Very similar to your state fairs. We've got horses, cattle, alpacas, pigs, goats, dogs, cats, you name it. You'll pretty much find it at Sydney Royal, I think.
Okay, every American right now wants to know, and I'm sorry for asking, do you show kangaroos?
Actually, I told a fib. There are no kangaroos. There might be one on display, but not for a ribbon.
I didn't know what they would do. I didn't know if they do an obstacle course or, you know.
Actually, I'm pretty sure there'll be one in a display somewhere, just not competing for a ribbon.
Okay. All right. Well, every American wanted to know. I had to ask. I'm representing you.
That's fair enough.
Apparently, Fiona can't get up off the floor right now. But...
Oh, that's fantastic.
Hey, there's a whole new class. I've just invented
it. It could be. Maybe we can introduce it. Maybe we can have a horse racing a kangaroo next year as a new event in horse.
Well, you know, Kununurra Ag Show has horses v motorbikes.
We could have a three-way race between a kangaroo, a horse, and an ag bike.
Who would win, by the way? Are kangaroos really fast?
They are.
Yeah.
They're very fast. My Kelby hasn't managed to catch a kangaroo yet, but he gives good chase.
And my chihuahua just doesn't even see them unless she trips over them.
It's a good thing. That kangaroo would beat the crap out of your chihuahua.
So. Yeah, true.
I've seen Fiona's chihuahua. It has very little legs.
And cross eyes. Yeah, built like antique furniture.
All right, I'm done hijacking your interview. Go ahead, Fiona.
Well, I can't come back from that. Tell me about the horse section, Linda. What does your day-to-day job involve? Because I know you have been working there for, 5 or 6 months now?
Yeah, I've been full-time here preparing for our show. I started here in September working full-time to get ready, and... in our section, we've got camp drafting, tent pegging, polo cross, vaulting, police horses, rodeo, hacking, show jumping. We do the RDA Horse of the Year, the State Mounted Games, heavy horses, light and heavy harness, pony club. So we're actually quite a large horse section. I think all up we probably have about close to around 1,300 horses actually competing.
Yep.
And then another lot that come in to do entertainment and display. So that there's a lot of horses on the grounds throughout the 14 days. So
And there are horses coming and going because they don't all...
Yeah, they don't all come in at the start and stay the full 14 days. We actually have to kind of Tetris them in and out of the stable to get them all to fit.
Yeah, much as they may like to stay for the 14 days.
That's right. Some are here for the full 14 days, but a lot of them have to come and go while they're competing.
And this is a bit of a pinnacle for a lot of competitors, really, because that's quite rigorous qualifications to get a prize.
It is indeed, especially for our hacks and show hunters, that they need to work their way around all the smaller ag shows throughout the states to get in. So they'll need to win at least 7 open wins throughout the year to actually perform and qualify for Sydney Royal. So they have to submit their performances by a certain date. They actually had to qualify. Our closing date of entries was back in November last year. They submit their performances, the committee have a look at them, and then let them know whether or not they've been able to qualify or not. And the breeds are similar. They have to submit their performances. Show jumping goes through a similar thing. So everyone has to kind of qualify throughout the year through the previous 12 months to try and get in. So it's quite hard just to make it.
Yeah. And so you've got something, I mean, basically there's a horse on that main arena from sun up to sundown and beyond, because once the actual classes have finished for the day, you have entertainment as well, which, Glenn, you're going to love this. Tell Glenn what the entertainment is.
Oh, Linda. We will. Yeah, Glenn, this year we're actually got the Man from Snowy River event happening. We're doing a reproduction of the Man from Snowy River is our main arena entertainment. So we've got Linnell Smith, who's worked here. She actually used to run horse and now she runs our entertainment department. She's got a production of the Man from Snowy River happening and I'm really looking forward to it. She did it once, it was years ago, they did it once and they did the return from Man from Snowy River and it had a big, big break and now she's bringing it back and I'm really looking forward to it. So it's going to be great. They've actually got the people who did the original music in the movie are doing the score for the music here as well. So
Glenn loves the music, don't you, Glenn?
Yeah, I'm very excited. They've actually taken out some of the seating to build the hill for them to run the Brumbies down and for them to recreate the descent down the treacherous descent recreate that. So it's going to be really exciting. So all those horses will be on the grounds as well to run that.
See, if I came up, there'd be you and me with a cheese on a stick and a glass
That's
of wine
right.
crying our
What's
eyes out
crying
at the music.
Our eyes out as that music played.
I need to send Jamie down. I really do. She would have a ball doing that.
Yeah.
I would probably Man from the Snowy River is not my favorite. My co-host it is her favorite of all time. I would probably rather go to the Young Auctioneer competition.
They're always really good to watch. They're very talented, those young guys.
And then the woodchuck, you guys have everything. I'm trying to compare notes here, what you have and kind of what we have at some of our competitions. And you have the wood chopping, which we do a lot of that up here. And, of course, the Canadians do a lot of that.
Actually, we have some guys from overseas coming over for that, yep.
Now, we do here at the Pennsylvania Farm Show, which is one of the largest indoor farm shows here in the United States, and they've done this for 100 years. They do a sheep-to-shaw competition. I see you have sheep and fleece listed, where they actually shear the sheep, and they do the entire process to make it into wool by hand, and then actually weave it into something by the end of the day.
Wow.
So that's kind of cool because you stop in all day long and watch their progress. You know, they actually have the old looms there and the whole thing, and then it's a sweater or a jacket or something by the end of the day.
Wow, that's fantastic.
So there's an idea for next year.
Yeah, that is indeed.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
I can flag that one too.
And then they auction they auction what's made for charity at the end of the day. Yeah.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah. So there's an idea. I'm helping you out here.
I was going to say, writing that one down too.
And the pumpkin challenge, I mean, that's a big thing here. So is super large pumpkins big there too?
Oh, yes. We do have the giant pumpkin challenge here. I'm trying to remember how heavy our pumpkin was last year, that one. I'm sure it was 700 odd kilos or something. It was massive.
Yeah, I'm looking
And then
here,
at the had... end, it got donated to the zoo, I think it was. And some of the, I think it was the elephants ate it or something.
Why do I think that's funny? I don't know. <That's funny.
laughs> Because it was too big to cook with.
Yeah. It probably got
but
tough.
The elephants, I'm sure it was the elephants or something.
Oh, yeah. My gosh.
You can't put that in your oven.
My manager's probably listening going, that's not what happened, Linda.
Now, we
I'm sure I saw
it's
that.
A good story.
I got to ask you guys, this seems like something you would do. We have something here that's very popular in the States. There's even TV shows about it called pumpkin chunking, where they actually build these machines to throw pumpkins great distances.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. We don't have that.
Oh,
we do have a horse class called Pumpkin Snatch, where you hitch up your horse to its little wagon and you get dragged along on like a slide, like an old-fashioned slide, and you got to lean down and grab pumpkins, snatch the pumpkins. This is a true story.
This is a parallel universe. What just happened?
It's a real class and it's called the Pumpkin Snatch.
Okay. I apologize to anybody that's tuning into this short show to hear about horses. Apparently, we don't talk about that anymore. I want to come to the Royal Agricultural Society show, the Easter show. Now I want
to
come.
Anyone that wants to go, get buy a ticket. You can log online.
Next year we have to come down.
Sydney Royal.
We'll have to come down, and Fiona and I can do live shows from there. Wouldn't that be fun?
Oh, you should. That would be fantastic.
Yeah. So you've got to do another year, Linda.
Look, we'll never rule it out.
Well, you know, I'm too scared to mention this because you'll smack me, but you're 2 weeks out, aren't you?
We are, yes. Yeah. We are 14 days out from the first day of the show.
You stay on site, yeah? When do you move on site?
Probably next week for me.
How many people will you get there? How many people show up?
Through the gates, we have, I think it's around 900,000 we get through.
Wow. That's a lot of people. Yeah.
It is a lot. So when you think of the size of Sydney, it's quite a lot.
That's a lot of beer, royal beer and cider.
It is. a lot of cheese sticks. I probably should have looked up the stats of how many cheese sticks get eaten.
Yeah, you probably have all the food numbers,
scones.
Too. Yeah.
So, I know my personal top was I ate 11 in one day once. But that
11
was a
cheese sticks?
Year.
One day?
No, that's... Can we cut that out later, please?
Nope. That's
no.
All
no,
right, it's
come back to me later and ask me about the turkey wrapped in bacon.
Yeah. All right, it is sydneyroyal.com.au. Sydneyroyal.
That's the one.
.com.au. Yep. Good luck at the show. Have a blast, and please have a cheese stick for me.
Thank you kindly.
All right. Well, coming up next, we have our song of the day, and then we hear from Chamberlain's lawyers on lease agreements in our legal segment for the month.
What is this love that runs so deep? We try to be the best that we can be for them with every stride and every move. It's up to us to prove. It is a dance between horse and man, spirits in unity. When I ride you in perfect harmony, when you carry me, their hearts are big, their bodies strong, their feet are sure. It's up to us to mirror them with every step and every touch. We will earn their trust. It is a dance between horse and man, spirits in unity. Dance between horse and man, spirits in
welcome to Saywood Breast from Chamberlain's Lawyers, and you know we're delighted to have Chamberlain's as a sponsor for us again. So thanks for joining us, Saywood.
How are you today, Fiona?
Very well, thanks. Now, today we're going to talk about something that I'm sure we've all seen on social media going wrong. Strangely, you never see it actually go right, but I guess people don't talk about things that go right so much as they talk about things that go wrong, and that is lease agreements.
Okay, so there are a few areas where lease agreements can go wrong. You're correct, we do always hear about the bad stories in the media. So I've just tried to lump them generally into five categories for the listeners of different areas that they need to watch out for and clarify. But just as an overall point, I just want to say to the listeners that it would be in your best interest, whether you're the owner of the horse or the person leasing the horse, to get everything in a properly written agreement, which Chamberlain's can help you with if you want to contact us, because you just don't want any doubts as to what the answers are to any of the questions that might come up throughout the course of the lease.
Absolutely.
Okay, so the first category is what I call cost and payment. So you need to clarify what type of lease it is, if there is a cost to lease the horse, because sometimes people will put horses on a free lease. But regardless of what it is, you need to clarify that so that both parties are aware of what they're agreeing to in terms of cost. And if there is a cost, how the payments will be made and when the payments are due and the consequences for not making the payment. All of that needs to be clear between the parties. That's my first category. My second category is time period and breach. So the parties need to agree on how long the lease is going to run for and any events that would terminate the lease if it's indefinite or if it terminates before a date that's agreed in the agreement. So, for example, you might have a clause about the failure to pay and how that might bring about a termination of the lease. You might also have clauses in there about an option to purchase. The person who's leasing the horse might want the option to purchase the horse at the end of the lease, or they might just want what's called a right of first refusal, which basically means that if you want to sell the horse at the end of the lease, you first offer it to the person who had been leasing it, and if they turn it down, then you would start to try to sell the horse to someone else.
And I guess the other thing in that is when the lease agreement ends, that another lease agreement is signed, that agreement just doesn't continue on into the future for however long, you know, the terms are set, and then when that's ended, you make the decision whether the lease will roll around again or not.
Yeah, that's right. And it's up to the parties, of course, how long they want that to go for. But you just need to make it clear so that people aren't in doubt as to when the lease finishes.
Absolutely.
Because they can always make a new lease, in which case they can renegotiate all of those terms, but it just needs to be certain for the parties so that you don't get into a fight about wanting the horse back early, say, for example.
Yep.
The third thing is relevant information, okay? Now, this is where people can really get themselves into trouble, is that you need to accurately detail the identity of the parties to the lease, okay, including the owner of the horse, because sometimes something like a horse could be in the name of, for example, a business, whereas you've been dealing directly with, say, the director of the business. So everyone needs to know who everyone is and where they're located and how they can get into touch with them. The actual horse needs to be properly identified, and the actual location where the horse will be kept needs to be properly identified. So that in the event that you, say, as the owner, have to take repossession of the horse for whatever reason, because the lease terminates or whatever, that you actually know where they're intending to keep the horse. And I'd also advise, as the lease goes on, to always keep tabs on your horse. But we need to make sure that all of these things are clear in the agreement. I think the next group is control and care of the horse, is what I'll just call it generally. A lot of owners will want to stipulate certain things that they want done with the horse, maybe some sort of treatment or therapy that the horse needs. There are some scenarios where people will actually loan tack and equipment with the horse that they want used on the horse, which then needs to be identified. All of these items need to be dealt with in terms of running them, the condition they're expected to be returned in. And you also need to nut out how the horse is going to be transported off the property to the person leasing it, if that's what is happening. Sometimes people will lease a horse and leave it at the property. If it's going anywhere at the beginning of the lease, you need to detail that and who's paying for that. And then also the return of the horse needs to be detailed, so it's clear what parties liable for the cost of return of the horse and when that's due to be done and what sort of notice period needs to be given for return. All of these things are going to affect how the horse is cared for and how the horse is going to leave and come back to the owner, and anything that's got to do with the control of the horse and the use of the horse should be detailed in the agreement to the extent that it's possible to detail that, so that the parties actually know essentially what's going to be happening with the horse over this period of time. And I think the owners will find they feel a lot better about the horse if they at least can rely on the agreement and point to the agreement and say, I specifically said that this horse needed this particular supplement or drug treatment, and you did or didn't do it.
Yeah. And I mean, the other big thing that comes into that is, I guess, a really important thing to be written up in a lease agreement is what occurs if there is a catastrophic injury to the horse that requires either euthanasia or a large amount of vet money and time, and just so that both parties know where they stand, because that's a tough one if you're leasing the horse and you're all of a sudden up for thousands of dollars in veterinary care.
That's correct. And that brings me to my last grouping.
I jumped the gun.
Risk. Okay.
Jumped the gun.
Are you thinking about it? So indemnity and risk have a few things that you would sort of put under this category. The first thing is permitted uses and limitations for using the horse. Okay. So for example, it's an older horse, you know it won't stay sound if it's jumped a lot, but it'll be fine for basic flat work. Those sorts of things.
Yep.
Need to be spelled out so that, you know, the horse isn't being used in such a way that it's going to come back to the owner less sound than it left. Also, just for the horse's obviously welfare and comfort, that he's not being asked to do things that he's just not going to be able to do. In indemnity, okay, given by the person leaving the horse, basically to protect the owner if, say, for example, the person leasing the horse is injured while riding the horse. So you want your indemnity in there. You need to spell out who is the responsible party in the event of the veterinary care issue that you were raising, including the, you know, what is going to happen if the horse needs to be euthanized, the details of the regular vet for the horse. That sort of stuff should be included. If the horse is insured, that information needs to be in there as well. And if, you know, the parties haven't insured the horse and the person, say, leasing the horse, the owner later decides to get insurance, then the parties need to ensure that they're aware of what that insurance covers. The notice to the owner, so for example, say there's a catastrophic event and the horse has to be put down immediately, how are you going, and you can't get a hold of the owner, what sort of notice are you going to be able to give? So you might want to deal with all those sorts of issues. And then also just dealing with any warranties or disclosures that might be an issue. So, for example, if you know that the horse has a vice, then you might want to disclose that so that they can, for example, not keep the horse that cribs in the paddock that's just got a plain rail at the top that's just going to be destroyed.
Yeah.
So all of that stuff that, you know, involves risk and liability and stuff needs to be spelled out in the agreement as well.
I'm doing lots of nodding at the end here, which, you know, isn't great for radio, but I'm agreeing with you.
So those are the major categories. I mean, obviously, that's not everything. I mean, the agreement needs to be properly drafted, but that gives people an idea of the sort of stuff that they might want to nut out and negotiate with the other side before they actually, you know, draft something and then find later on that didn't include a bunch of this stuff that they didn't work out.
Absolutely, and it really just gives people those thinking points of what does need to be included in an agreement. Thank you so much, Saywood. Where can people find you?
Email me if they would like. It's saywood.breast@chamberlains.com.au. They can also just put an inquiry in on our website, chamberlains.com.au, and they can also contact me through the Equine Legal Services Chamberlains Law Firm Facebook page. You can send me a message and we'll respond.
Great, and we'll include all those details on our show notes. Thank you so much, Saywood.
No problem, Fiona. Thank you.
You're listening to Horses in the Morning, and it is Thursday morning. It's the Australian edition with Fiona Deering of Remote Coach. She is here the first Thursday of every month talking all things Australia, New Zealand, everything down under. And of course, you are from Remote Coach. Why don't you fill everybody in on that quick?
Sure. Remote Coach is the solution for riders who may not have access to coaches as often as they'd like, or for people who just want ideas for their daily ride. So there are a series of audio downloads that you can purchase via the website at www.remote-coach.com. And they're all under $10 Australian, and they're basically little lessons, for want of a better word, lots of ideas for riding exercises that you can use whilst you're riding to keep you on track. And we also have, you can purchase them either over the internet and have them download via email, or you can purchase them on already loaded onto an MP3 player.
And I know a couple of our American listeners have done that, and then you just ship them out to them, right?
Sure do. Okay, I've got nice. Even one going to New York. That's exciting, isn't it?
There you go. Terrific.
It's going to get to New York before I ever get to New York. But, you know.
Well, why don't you introduce our next guest? And well, you know what? Let's let the trailer introduce our next guest. Do you want to do that? All right. Let's take a listen.
Horse population, they may carry our cryptosporidium. So to actually manage Sydney's water, we need to remove the horses out of that catchment area.
4.5 million people drink the water that comes out of this dam.
My vote on the committee was to leave the Brumbies alone. Leave them as are. And they're not doing any damage to the environment because there's not enough of them. And I thought if I don't do it, they could shoot these horses. I didn't want to see them shot.
There's nothing on the camera, not one picture. Nothing's been here.
I can see a pig in that one, a pig in that one.
You know, I'm very wary of those attachments that people have to horses and how that alters their thinking.
Actually, when I was coming up the flat there, there was horses on the flat, but they obviously didn't see or hear me because they didn't snort.
Are we at that point where we're not going to have a win and we need to adopt a different approach?
It's time you took the rifles from the wall and started shooting them.
Oh, no, Jane, don't talk like that.
They've sort of done nothing wrong. They don't know the political side of things and why horses have to be removed from these areas.
Trapping wild horses in a remote locality with no roads and then have to be able to move those horses out in a humane way, in a safe way, it's a very difficult and dangerous task.
I'd like to welcome Russell Kilby to the show. Russell's the producer of a film I discovered a few weeks ago called The Man from Cox's River, which has recently won the Equus Film Festival Best International Film Award in New York City, which is very exciting for a little Australian film. Welcome, Russell. And can you give us a little bit of background of what the film's about, because it is about extracting some Brumbies from the wilderness in Australia, but there were quite a number of forces at work.
Yes. Well, Luke Carlin's a seventh generation Australian, which means his family's been living here for seven generations on the same sort of patch of dirt. And it's a very interesting, geographically, it's part of the Blue Mountains World Heritage Area, and actually flooded this valley in the 60s, early 60s, to make Sydney's water supply.
And sorry to interrupt, but this is only about 100 kilometres out of Sydney city itself,
yes, no,
isn't
that's
it?
Right, yes,
it's
that's
very
right.
close.
So 100 kilometres out of Sydney, there's this whopping great wilderness area that's been, that's part of, it's a national park, and it's also a catchment area. So it's got a lot of regulations around it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, he had a historical problem with the national parks in that he was being sort of slowly, he had a horse riding business. Well, his parents ran one of the most well-known horse riding businesses in
Australia. Remember that from when I lived in Sydney,
It was called Pack Saddlers,
yes.
and a lot of celebrities and a lot of people rode with these guys, and they had access to this river frontage along the Cox's River, which went for like about 30 miles along the river, and it's complete jungle. I've been down there a few times, obviously, and it's just an amazing piece of real estate, really, you know. But it's national park, and he got his family's business got sort of canned in a way when it was declared a wilderness area, which is a kind of means nothing, no commercial activity could happen down there.
So wilderness area is really, in Australia, is one step up again from the restrictions around a national park, correct?
That's right, yeah. Well, it's the most stringent sort of regulations you can have on an area.
Yeah.
And it was kind of ironic because, as you've seen the movie, his family were friends and of a guy called Miles Dumpsey, who was in the 1920s like the original sort of Australian environmentalist. So they sort of showed him around the country there, and then later on, because of his sort of mission to kind of, I mean, it is an amazing area and it should be protected.
Oh, it's beautiful,
Luke would, it has no problem with it being protected because he thinks it is amazing. But it was just sort of like a bit of blowback on his family that they'd been instrumental in helping it sort of get up and running. And
yes.
Then they got sort of booted out, more or less. When we first met him, he was kind of pretty bitter, you know. And I found out about this film was that someone came into my work. So this is a question that everyone often asks, you know, how did you find out about this?
Mm.
Someone came into my work and said, I've got your next documentary for you, and it was actually Luke's sister, and she put a map of this area and said, you know, my brother's catching brumbies, which is what we Australians called wild horses, in the Blue Mountains, and I went, wow, that sounds great. Mm. And so I was off on an adventure. You can probably edit some of this. But,
The Brumbies, there weren't a huge number in there. Am I right in thinking there were about 80?
It's about 80.
Yeah. And the background was, was that they, because it's a water supply, they were concerned about contamination of the water supply from the wild horses.
About contamination from the water supply from the birds and the chickens and the squirrels and the everything else that's in there?
No.
Well, the pigs are probably the most likely transmitter of that. What happened was Sydney got shut down for about 2 weeks in 96, I think it was, 97, there was a thing called a cryptosporidium virus, and they basically couldn't drink the water. And, you know, for a big city, that's kind of a bit of a freak out. So they have, you know, they're trying to sort of tick the boxes on how they can sort of manage that risk to, and they had a sort of bundle of money that the national parks normally wouldn't have, because this was an expensive operation to get these horses out.
And I mean, it was expensive because it's a designated wilderness area. You can't take any vehicles in, so they were having to helicopter yards in. And I think this is the thing. I watched the movie last night, and it blew me away. I mean, congratulations, because it's just fantastic. But anyone who's had anything to do with wild horses, you know, these guys had to trap these wild horses, and then they couldn't
run them up a race onto trucks. They had to walk them out. So they had to halter break them and then walk them out to an area where they could truck them out. And these things, they were wild. They were really wild.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they hadn't seen any humans like ever. You know, they were completely wild. And it's really kind of a beautiful thing to observe horses that have formed their own little groups and you know, it's quite an interesting thing when you've only ever seen domesticated horses, then to see wild horses, they're almost like a different species, really.
Yeah, you know, and they were in sort of small family groups, weren't they? Sort of half a dozen.
Yeah, they were in little mobs. You know, there was bachelor mobs. The first group was like a bunch of bachelors.
Yeah.
And that's why they were quite bitey and kicky, you know, because they were.
Because that's the way bachelors are.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Exactly. And they were, you know, they were hogging the TV remote and stuff like that. They were quite full on, the first group. And, so it's hard to explain that you just can't get trucks down there. And, you know, on every other mission in Australia that they've tried to relocate Brumbies, you can just get a four-wheel. They work it out where they can get a four-wheel drive truck into the area, and this just was completely impossible because it was so rough.
And so basically we have to halter break these horses in the woods,
in the
wild,
and then
kind of lead them out one at a time.
Lead them out one at a time up a hill that was like, you know, pretty close to perpendicular. You know, it was like a, you know, there was no, you'll see in the, you know, it's almost as steep as a horse can go up, you know. So
it was amazing. So I'm not sure how long was it from when they actually got them in the yards to when they were leading them out?
They got them in the yards the day before. and then they spent like maybe 3 hours a horse, you know, trying to calm them down a bit and get them out.
And then they'd lead them.
Some, you know, the horse work, you know, was incredible to see that they could get them to a stage where they could lead them out, you know. And the good thing about the Brumbies or the Mustangs or the wild horses is that they generally sort of start to get smaller as they.
They weren't big, were they?
They weren't huge horses, so.
They look like large ponies, you know.
They were pit ponies from the mines. That's where they originally came from. So there was a lot of mining up in that area.
Right.
And when they closed the mines, they just sort of like let the horses go. So that's the sort of
So obviously, and I don't want to give away the end of the film, but everybody wants to know what's happened to the horses.
Well, most of them found good homes, actually, as far as we know, and they all were you know, given to people who want to have Brumbies, you know, and some, which is a difficult thing. You know, you've got to either break them in, you know, you can't just, you sort of really have to. You know, it sounds romantic to have a wild horse on your property, but not if they have teeth problems and you've got to get someone to look at their teeth or you know what I mean. You sort of it's a tricky situation. So they tried to find good homes for them, and some of them got bred because it's an interesting lineage that they had. So some people were interested in trying to, you know, cross them with some other sort of breeds to sort of make their own kind of Brumby mixture, you know. And as far as we know, they all, and we when we were screening the film, because we went around Australia and New Zealand with this film, talking to audiences, and every once in a while someone would stick up their hand and go, "I got one of them Brumbies, you know, she's doing well," you know. And so it was a lovely thing to be part of. But it was an incredibly dangerous and crazy expedition. And it sort of hinted it in the movie that it might have been like a poison chalice that they got this guy to do this mission that was basically impossible. And somehow he manages to to pull it off.
And I think also because they were working, there were so many contributors to it. I mean, along with Luke, you know, Sydney Water were involved, the National Parks and Wildlife, the RSPCA. You know, there were a lot of, you know, a lot of
parties.
A lot of parties, you know, kind of coming together to work together and to get out of, you know, a seemingly small amount of horses. And of course, in the past, they probably would have been aerially culled. But because of what had happened in the Guy Fawkes National Park, where there was the aerial cull of the Brumbies and a huge outcry over the cruelty of that, that wasn't able to be done. So I think the other thing that I found in the movie, the stockman's horses that were, you know, being ridden in and out to move these horses, they were amazing because they had these Brumbies just biting them, kicking them, mounting them, just, you know, and they really all just sort of got on with their jobs. I mean, the you know, amazingly solid horses to put up with that sort of behaviour and, you know, what a good stockman needs in that situation, really.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah.
And we might point out, Fiona, that in Australia, cowboys are called stockmen.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. And whenever I accidentally slipped and said cowboy to Luke, he went, "I'm not a cowboy because I'm not a boy, yeah, and I ride a horse, not a cow." You know, so he was.
I could hear that. Yeah, having watched the movie last night, I can hear that. And you also took this film to the Equus Film Festival in New York and won Best International Film. That's pretty exciting.
It was very exciting. And we took that up to, if you have a look, if the people want to have a look on our Facebook page, which has got like 86,000, you know, fans or whatever, I took that award up to see Luke on the weekend and, you know, he was quite impressed. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it was great, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had a ribbon from the film festival. I gave it to him. I said, he's got a glass cabinet full of, like, gun trophies and Doctor Who memorabilia. And said, yeah, stick that in your cabinet.
Okay, mate. I didn't picture him as a Doctor Who fan. I didn't. That caught me off guard.
Yeah, so you can watch this movie, Glenn. It's got
he's
sci-fi
okay
reference.
Now. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I did have a quiet giggle. I remember the first 10, 15 minutes. I'm like, is that a Doctor Who badge he's wearing?
That's funny.
Yeah, well, he's you know, he's an interesting character, and that's why it's resonated with you know, so many people in Australia, is because he's quite, you know, he's not your usual, what you imagine, you know, a country sort of bushman is, you know. He's got some quirky sort of things going on. And the amazing guy who did all the horse work, Adam, he's a real wine connoisseur. So I was taking out bottles of Pinot, you know, and saying, hey, you should try this one, Campfire. And he's going, yeah, it's good, that one, yeah. So,
all right, you can
got on pretty well.
We need to. You can find it at The Man from Cox, COXS River, CoxsRiver.com. And now it's available in Australia, New Zealand as a digital download. You can buy it from iTunes or from the website. But for the rest of the world, how do they get it?
Well, they can get it direct from us at the moment. We've got an all regions NTSC DVD, which has got a lot of good special features and stuff on it. But we'll be turning on the iTunes switch in the next little while. So if they like us on Facebook, and we'll make a big noise about it being turned on for the whole rest of the world when we get that happening. It shouldn't take too long. So,
and it really is just visually spectacular to look at. I lived in Sydney in the late 90s for a couple of years, and it was just, you know, going up to the Blue Mountains blew me away. Being from Tasmania, it's so beautiful. But the cinematography is fantastic. So if you're, you know, not even if you are from Australia, but certainly if you're not from Australia, it gives a, you know, it's very visually stunning.
Yes, and there's also this old movie in that we found and became friends with called Sons of Matthew, which is part of people will see it. This quite famous Australian movie that was from 1949 that actually has a lot of Brumby footage in there. So it's interesting that yeah. the way history sort of feeds on itself in this film.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for your time today, Russell, and you know, congratulations on all the awards you've won and for getting it up and finished, because Lord knows that's no small feat in itself.
No.
And all the very best with it.
Yes, thank you very much. And we are working on another a feature film that has a horse in it. So
what's that?
People can look out for that. Well, like, you know, it's early stages, but hopefully we'll be talking to you
telling.
And Glenn. Yes, in the not too distant future, we'll be talking to you and Glenn again and saying, here's our new movie.
You've got my email address.
All right, cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Make right. sure you let us know.
I'm excited to see this.
To you both.
All right, take care. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, that I can't wait to see that now. We'll have to have a viewing party here in the United States. Boy, it'd be cool if we could get that in before Rolex and all see it together. That'd be fun at our meetup.
That'd be great. Yeah.
That'd be fun. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. And thank you, Fiona, for doing the Australian episode once again.
Thank you. I love doing it each month. Have a great time.
Well, you know what? You always come up with the coolest guests. Now, Jamie is still waiting for the Man from Snowy River episode where you have all the stars from the movie. So
I'm working on it.
All right.
Be careful what you wish for, Glenn.
I don't have to be here. She's going to co-host that one. I'll let you two handle that. She won't be able to talk. You're going to have to do all the talking. She won't. Well, she'll be tongue-tied.
I know. We're going to have to, you know, spread the guest out over a number of days so that Jamie can talk.
That's right. So I wanted to remind everybody that tomorrow is Really Bad Ads Day. So get your ads in to jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. And we will be drawing the prize for last month, as well as announcing what the prize is coming up for this month. So all of that is going on Friday's show. So join us then. For links to today's guests and show notes, go to horsesinthemorning.com. Also, to find Fiona, go to remotecoach.com. Check it out there.
Remote-coach.
Remote-coach. Yes,
coach. I know. Crazy.
Always forget that. Remote-coach.com. Yep. It's .com, not .co, right?
The other website is realriders.co. You can never have too many websites.
Right. Just to confuse it. So that is where you can find Fiona. And, of course, you can listen to all of our shows on the Horse Radio Network on the app. That's the simplest, easiest way to do it. Just go to the iOS or Android app store and search for Horse Radio Network. It's free and it's easy to use. Talk to you again next month, Fiona.
Looking forward to it already.
Have a bacon-covered turkey leg for me.
Oh. I'll get Linda to send a photo.
Okay, good. Yeah, do that.
Yeah.